you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Hope you have a terrific Mother's Day weekend coming up. To every mother who's listening right now, a collective thank you from those of us who appreciate the wonderful work that you've put in to caring for your kids, not just in childhood, but later on if you're of that age. Hope you have a wonderful Mother's Day coming up on Sunday. It's going to be a fun Terry Gross Fresh Air at noon today, where she's going to play excerpts of interviews she's done over the years where some of her very famous guests talk about their moms and their influence on their life and on their career. That's coming up at noon right after Film Week on Fresh Air here on KPCC. But we start things off on Air Talk with the very latest on COVID-19 and the continuing good news for those of us here in California, seeing we continue to lead the continental United States in the low case rates of COVID-19, and also seeing reopenings and higher capacity openings for some businesses as a result. With us from UC Davis Children's Hospital, Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases and Professor of Medicine at UC Davis, Dr. Dean Blumberg. Very good Friday morning to you, Dr. Blumberg.
Yeah, happy Friday to you, Larry.
It seems that times just keep improving here, even as other parts of the world are devastated by COVID-19. But first, your assessment of where we are here.
Yeah, we're in a good place in California in general, and LA County in particular is doing quite well. Remember in the olden days, in December and early January, there are about 20,000 cases a day in Los Angeles County. For the past couple of weeks, there's been less than 500, sometimes less than 400 cases per day diagnosed. So much lower rates of transmission occurring now.
Which is great to see. I welcome you with your questions, your comments about COVID-19. Dr. Blumberg with us. We're at 866-893-KPECC. You can tweet at AirTalk or post on the AirTalk Facebook page or on the AirTalk page itself, kpecc.org. Just click on the segment. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Dr. Blumberg, let's talk about one of the things we just learned this morning. Pfizer and its collaborator on the vaccine, BioNTech, applying for full FDA approval. That's likely to take months. But share with us a little bit about what's involved in that process.
So to get full FDA approval, they submit reams and reams of data. It's a very formalized process where many people within the FDA, subject matter experts, review in exquisite detail all the information. There's often a back and forth. They have more questions. They need more information. The company gets that information to the FDA. And then there's the package insert, that every single word in that package insert is gone over for the indications, the official indications for the vaccine. So it's quite an elaborate process, and usually does take several months. I would expect it to be at least 6 months.
And at that point, if they get the permanent approval and Moderna follows, they're expected to ask for approval in the coming weeks. You think it likely that we're going to see beyond just the University of California and the Cal State system, more places require full vaccination as a condition of employment or attendance at certain events?
Well, I think it opens that door to see if institutions want to do that. There's no way that any institution is going to do that under the emergency use authorization. But once these vaccines obtain full FDA approval, then you can see institutions like hospitals, for example, that can require it, similar to how they require influenza vaccine for their healthcare providers. And schools could require it. So you might see, for example, in the state, it would take legislative preventative action, but the state might want to require it for an immunization required for school attendance. Now, I haven't seen any legislation like that. I want to be clear about that. But it's the kind of thing that you open the door to that.
It's something that the superintendent of the massive LA Unified District, Austin Buettner, has said that at the point that there is an approved vaccine for kids, that the expectation would be, just like the other childhood vaccines, the kids would be receiving a COVID-19 vaccine before or as a condition of staying on campus if they've already returned by that point. Dr. Blumberg, where do we stand on kids' vaccination?
So we have vaccines. The Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine is available for 16 years of age and older, and we've learned that we expect imminently to get the emergency use authorization of that vaccine down to 12 years of age. So that'll open it up for children 12 to 15 years of age to be vaccinated. And then Moderna and Johnson & Johnson are doing studies also in younger children. So that really opens up for an expanded segment of the population to get immunized, to get immune, and that gets us closer and closer to the immunity we need in our communities to really decrease transmission.
866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. A little bit later this hour, we'll talk with a physician on the Navajo Reservation, where the Navajo Nation, about half of its members live on that massive reservation in the Four Corners area. We'll be talking with her about what she's seeing there. They have extraordinarily high vaccination rates, and that's even with a highly rural population. We'll talk about how they're accomplishing that. Of course, one of the factors may be that the nation has dealt with such devastating loss with the spread of COVID-19 early in the pandemic, as there were a number of super spreader events which took COVID-19 throughout the reservation. So we'll talk about where things stand with the Navajo Reservation in the Four Corners area coming up later this hour. We're at 866-893-KPECC, the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. What is our best understanding right now, Dr. Blumberg, of how long the vaccine is likely to be effective?
Yeah, I'm still not sure about that. Unfortunately, we don't have an immune correlate of immunity. We don't have a blood test that tells us if your antibody levels are so high that you are actually immune. So you actually have to do the studies to follow people after they've been immunized and see if immunity wears off over time. We know we have durable immunity for at least 6 months, but we've had public statements from leaders at Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna state that they expect boosters to be needed within 9 months following immunization. But I haven't seen any data on that yet. So I'm still uncertain how long immunity is going to last.
Okay. And, you know, with people falling off, getting vaccinated, you know, we had so much demand. Now, the latest I've seen, we're generally about half the demand that we had even a couple of weeks ago. Are you concerned that we could end up with a crisis coming up with people whose vaccines begin to wear off? At the same time, you've got still a significant minority of people who are unvaccinated.
Yeah, that can happen. I think what we've done with our vaccine delivery is the easy part, is that we know that there are a lot of people who really wanted to be vaccinated, and we vaccinated those people. And now we have people who are less enthusiastic or even don't want to be vaccinated. And we need to make sure that we have messaging to these people that's culturally appropriate, that speaks to them, that's from within their communities, to convince them that it's the safest thing to do for themselves and for their communities. We've had many people who are reluctant to get vaccinated initially because the vaccines were new, but now we've had over 250 million doses administered in the U.S. alone. So we've got robust safety and experience with these vaccines.
Dr. Dean Blumberg, UC Davis Children's Hospital with us. Roy has a question about HIPAA regulations and how they're applied regarding vaccination. Roy said he went to the dentist recently, and before his appointment, he asked if everybody in the office had been vaccinated and was told that couldn't be disclosed because of HIPAA privacy regulations. And so Roy wonders, well, is anything going to change when vaccines are fully authorized? Is that something that maybe HIPAA wouldn't apply to? And does this also, this issue of HIPAA privacy, figure into the viability of vaccine passports?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So you're asking basically for personal medical information from the workers in the office. And so they're not going to answer that even with when the vaccines are authorized. But I think what you'll be seeing from healthcare institutions, for example, is they can say, we require it. Unless there's a medical reason not to. And so we've seen that with influenza vaccine, or mm-hmm. they might even say what their rate is within that institution, but they won't tell you for any one individual because of that. Now, with vaccine passports or companies or venues requiring vaccination, these are businesses. They can do whatever they want. So if they want to require vaccines or masks, they're welcome to do that, and they can turn people away if they're not meeting their requirements.
All right. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. I was reading a fascinating article in today's Wall Street Journal, something I was completely unaware of. Apparently, to get the extra doses out of the vials of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine, it requires a special type of syringe that's called a low dead space syringe. It enables you to get down and get that little bit that's left at the very bottom of the vial. And apparently with Pfizer and Moderna, they overfilled the vials just to make sure there was enough there. And it ended up typically with an extra dose or two in the vial. But if you don't have that low dead space special syringe, you can't get to that extra amount that's there in the bottom of the vial. So apparently there's a shortage of those syringes, making it then you've got a wasted amount, in some cases, according to the journal, up to 17% of the vaccine in Pfizer vials isn't removed, up to 13% of Moderna vaccine isn't removed from their vials if you don't have the low dead space syringes. Here's something I think, you know, we weren't even thinking of in the beginning stages, Dr. Blumberg, about the vaccines being developed, that we'd need more of these specialized syringes, which have, you know, before the pandemic, just a very specialized use.
Yeah, you know, next time you take a look at a syringe, look at it closely, because what there is there's the syringe itself, where the liquid goes. There's the plunger, of course, on the other end. And then there's the needle. And then when the needle attaches, there's a little hub there to sort of screw on the needle itself. And that hub is dead space, basically. So it does fill with liquid. So it does fill with the vaccine dose. But you don't completely expel the whole vaccine dose. There's some liquid remaining there afterwards. So these low dead space ones really, really maximize the efficiency. And that's one of the reasons that the vaccine vials are overfilled, is to account for that dead space with regular syringes to make sure that they get 5 or 10 doses out of each vial. But then, you know, as you said, Larry, you can really get more doses by having more efficient syringes. So, you know, at this point, it'd be nice to have more of those specialized syringes. But, you know, fortunately, at least in the U.S., we've got plenty of vaccine now, and we've got enough vaccine to meet demand.
Where do things stand in India at this point, other places that are being devastated by the virus? You know, how much vaccine is being sent there to help people in these areas hardest hit?
Well, India itself is the world's largest vaccine producer, so they can produce their own vaccine as long as they have the all the ingredients necessary to make the vaccine. You know, in India, it's really a horrible situation where there's so much transmission that there are many reports of vaccine breakthrough. Remember that just being vaccinated is one part of protecting yourself, and no vaccine works 100%. If there's a really high concentration of virus, a high rate of transmission, even vaccinated people, you can overcome that vaccine-induced immunity. So with the lack of lockdowns in India, what we're seeing is that we are seeing these different strains, the variants that are more transmissible. We're seeing high rates of transmission, even among those who are vaccinated. So it's really a tragedy.
The World Health Organization is given emergency use authorization this morning to one of China's manufactured vaccines, Sinopharm. So this could allow millions of doses to go to countries that are in need, particularly in Asia. How big a development is that with the WHO approval?
It's nice to have another vaccine out there. The Sinopharm vaccine has about a 70 to 80% efficacy that's been reported. They've done some studies on that vaccine. Unfortunately, they haven't published a lot of the data on those studies. So we'd certainly like to see more data with the Sinopharm vaccine. They've done studies in the UAE that have been reported to be safe and effective. The WHO has evaluated those studies. They don't have a lot of confidence in the safety of the vaccine just because they haven't seen the data in specific populations, such as those 60 years of age and older. But, you know, clearly China's got a lot of capacity for vaccine manufacture, so it really makes more vaccine available. And I would hope that they would publish their data so that people can be more confident in the vaccine.
So this now means there are several vaccines that the World Health Organization has given emergency use authorization to, and countries look to that as key for their own approval. So Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, the three, of course, that have been given FDA emergency use authorization here in the United States, also approved by the World Health Organization, AstraZeneca, and a version of the AstraZeneca vaccine made by the Serum Institute of India, and then today joining in that group, the one from China's pharmaceutical Sinopharm, getting that emergency approval from the WHO. Christina in Long Beach says she was listening to a New York Times podcast, and there's people on that were saying herd immunity is not going to be reached. Christine says, although we're good in California, the rest of the country is still dealing with COVID. And she's wondering what that means for us here. And are we going to see a resurgence of the virus here?
Yeah, so I think what some are talking about is that we shouldn't look for herd immunity because immunity might wane after being vaccinated. And then with the new variants being more highly transmissible, that we just may not achieve a high enough vaccination rate, current vaccination rate, to achieve that immunity over the long term. Yeah, I think we can achieve that. I think the issues are that we need to learn how long immunity lasts, when we need to give boosters. We're going to need to have the boosters keep up with the variants if necessary, if we need to change the formulation of the vaccine, similar to how we change influenza vaccines every season. So I do think eventually we'll get there, but I also don't think that we're ever going to totally eliminate COVID. It's going to be with us the rest of our lives, just like influenza vaccines or influenza viruses are. And I think what we're going to also be seeing is it'll become a seasonal, disease like influenza, that it'll probably decrease over the spring and summer and then ramp up again in the fall and the winter. So in California, in the U.S., I fully expect that the summer will probably have low rates of transmission. And what I'm really curious about is to see if transmission does ramp up again in the fall and the winter.
Well, and wouldn't it be great if in managing COVID, we could keep the hospitalization and fatality rate lower than the flu, because it takes a pretty heavy toll every year.
It does. And the influenza vaccines are not as effective as the COVID vaccines. Remember, even in a good year, influenza vaccines only provide about 40 to 50% efficacy. Now, that's better than 0%. So I strongly recommend influenza vaccine every year. Mm-hmm. But the COVID vaccines provide even more protection.
Dr. Blumberg, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir, for being with us, and have a terrific weekend. We'll look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thank you. Have a nice weekend also, Larry.
Dr. Dean Blumberg, UC Davis Children's Hospital, for a year plus, he's been joining us weekly to provide his expertise on COVID-19. He is at UC Davis Children's Hospital, where he's head of pediatric infectious diseases and a professor of medicine, UC Davis Medical. Coming up, we'll take a look at what's going on with employment and the the big mismatch, it seems, between the number of people unemployed by the pandemic and the number of employers looking to hire people but can't find them. What's going on? We'll take a look in just 1 minute.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win, and the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.